John woke late the next evening, wrapped in sheets that still smelled the slightest bit like Spencer. The boy hadn't slept in the bed while he'd been there, but he'd sat on the edge of the mattress while they'd talked. He'd rubbed his palms against the bedclothes, nervous, as he tried to figure out what to say. The faint traces were enough to calm John down before he dropped off to sleep. He just had to remind himself that he'd had far less for so very long. The cat was curled up beside him, its long hair no doubt shedding on the pillow. John should have probably retired to his private rooms to sleep, but he'd been exhausted and in need of something more than the silence and solitude of the room behind the bookcase, even if the only company he had at the moment was that of a cat. John stretched as he sat on the edge of the bed, feeling the muscles shift in his back, smiling a little at the burn of knots coming loose. Mulligan looked over at him, mewling plaintively as John shifted the mattress. The vampire shook his head and stood, leaning down briefly to scoop the cat up. His soft fur tickled along John's side as he padded, naked, out of the bedroom. He caught sight of Spencer's backpack as he headed toward the kitchen, lying abandoned on the floor near the sofa. He carefully turned away from it and busied himself looking for the expensive cat food Spencer had insisted he buy. He was filling a small ceramic dish when he heard something in the hallway. He paused, tilting his head a little and listening for the sound again. Sure enough, he heard it once more, the sound of shuffling shoes and soft whispers. John set the cat down on the floor with his bowl and stalked toward the front door. He threw it open without bothering to look at the peephole, an angry expression on his face. "Son of a bitch," he muttered, slamming the door as quickly as he'd opened it. There were certain things his considerably long life hadn't prepared him for. At the top of the list was waking to find half the dandy population standing on his doorstep. The doorstep to his safe house. His secret safe house. "Goddamn fucking Brendan," John growled, stalking toward the bookcase, intent on finding something suitable to wear. Maybe he could leave through the window. He was 260 years old. He could probably do it with minimal damage if he found something to break his fall. "John, open the door," the butcher called from the hallway, punctuating his demand with three hard knocks. "A lock isn't going to keep me out. Spencer doesn't actually live here anymore." John turned on his heel, hurrying back to the door and throwing it open once more. He glared at the vampires in his hallway, but reserved the brunt of his anger for the butcher. "Although, I don't know that hiding him away would actually count as him living here. Maybe the barrier doesn't go up if they've been kidnapped." "Fuck, did you find me?" John demanded. "Goddamn fucking Brendan," Butcher said with a smirk. "I'm going to kill him," John declared. "Ryan will be sad, of course, but he'll learn to live with it. Humans have short lives and even shorter memories." "I'd think twice about that," Butcher suggested, slipping under John's arm to enter the apartment. "Brendan's been right before. He might be right again someday." He headed straight for Mulligan, scratching the cat behind the ears. John was happy when the cat growled, looking up to glare at Butcher before turning his attention back to his food. At least someone understood loyalty. "Is my doorman still alive?" John asked, ignoring Butcher's quip about Brendan. "Alive, yes. Happy, no," Butcher replied. "You can have the elevator key back if you'd like." He reached into his pocket and tossed the key back to John, who caught it easily. "What do you want?" John demanded, enunciating each word so there would be no mistaking how angry he was. "Firstly, I'd like you to get dressed. Honestly, it's past sundown and you've just rolled out of bed. If I can give half my blood to Siska and still get up on time, you have no excuse." John raised an eyebrow in silent question at that, but Butcher ignored him. "Secondly," he said, "we need to talk." "About?" John prompted, just to try Butcher's patience. "Beckett," Butcher said flatly. "Go." John could have pointed out how incredibly impertinent it was for Butcher to be giving his elders orders, or he could have physically forced the other vampire to leave. But instead, John found his curiosity getting the better of him. He hesitated, just to make it clear that he was at no one's beck and call, and then turned toward the door behind the bookcase. He dressed in record time, grabbing the first thing he laid hands on in the closet, and hurried back to the main apartment. He didn't trust Butcher not to snoop around if left alone for too long. As it was, John found him poking at Spencer's backpack with the toe of his shiny loafers. "Well?" John said, expectantly. "Pete killed the envoy," Butcher said, matter-of-factly. John stood there, shocked and unsure of what to say. "Felix?" he asked, though there was little need of clarification. There were two other envoys currently in the city, Ryland and Suarez from Victoria. But Butcher had said, "the envoy." That could only mean Felix. "He was dead before he could even step foot off the plane," Butcher said. "That's not all. Nate and Michael were injured. So was Siska." John looked up sharply at that. Butcher took his mentoring very seriously. He rarely went anywhere without his fledgling at his side. Siska hadn't been in the hallway. "How?" John asked. "Staked," Butcher said. "Wentz missed his heart by an inch. Michael pulled him away at the last second." "He has good reflexes," John commented, filling the silence as he turned the thoughts over in his head. "What will happen to Pete?" John asked after a moment. "Nothing," Butcher said, disgusted. It wasn't a complete shock. After all, they'd gone through this with Brian 2 years earlier. No one knew what Pete was doing there in the first place, but the fact remained the same. He'd killed someone close to Brian, leaving a newborn fledgling, not yet risen, an orphan. John had never seen anyone so angry before. Brian was ancient, the oldest on this continent for sure, and he had allies and resources the likes of which John had never seen. To be cut off from that was terrifying. "He's dangerous, John," Butcher said softly, coming a few steps closer and giving their conversation an air of privacy. John knew it was only an illusion. There were too many vampires with exceptional hearing just outside the door for that to be true. "He's Beckett, and he leads this gang," John stressed. "Only because you wouldn't do it," Butcher pressed. "Nicholas wanted you, not him." "He gave me the choice," John said. "I chose not to. You shouldn't be bringing this up, Butcher. It was a lifetime ago." "For your boy, maybe, but not for us," Butcher said. "We have long memories for a reason." "Because we're not meant to die," John exclaimed. "Not so we can stage a coup 80 years after the fact." "Are you seriously standing by him?" Butcher demanded. His eyes narrowed as he took in John's defiant stance, the angry clench of his fists at his sides. "He isn't worth your loyalty. He certainly hasn't returned it." "Maybe not," John conceded. "But you're asking me to go against centuries of tradition." "There's a first time for everything," Butcher said. "For tearing our gang apart?" John asked. "For encouraging dandy violence? We've never done that before, and you want me to put my fingerprints all over it?"
There wouldn't even be any violence, Butcher stressed. Brian would support you. What Brian does, Gabriel does too. The dutiful fledgling, even at 250. Maya's grieving, she'll fall in love with the others. This city could be yours without even having to lift a finger.
And what about the dandies here? John demanded. Allies in other cities are all well and good, but it's this city that I have to worry about.
There are 20 dandies in your hallway, Butcher said. That's just over half of us. The others will either fall in line or they won't. They're free to run to Victoria with Beckett if they want. I won't feel sorry for them when the urge to return takes hold. If they think for a minute that Beckett isn't endangering them, they're far too stupid to last long anyway.
Is Brendan out there? John asked. If he is, he's being uncharacteristically quiet.
There isn't much goodwill toward him these days, Butcher explained. If he'd come tonight, half the vampires outside would have thought he was Gabriel's puppet. Gerard may be gone, but he's sown the seeds of discontent. We'll never truly be rid of him.
If Brendan was a puppet, Gerard would hardly draw attention to him, John said, rolling his eyes. Honestly, Butcher expected him to take over the gang with so many ridiculous people?
Butcher didn't reply to that, just stood there silently, letting John work through his options. Everything he'd said was true, of course. Beckett wasn't seeing the big picture, had let personal desires override what was best for the city and those who lived in it. He'd allowed slights, real and imagined, to govern his decision-making process. They'd already lost one ally due to Beckett's inability to let go of Pete Wentz, and they were most likely about to lose another. It wouldn't take long for the other gangs to try to gain a foothold. If they did, news would spread to other cities, making their enemies bold, willing to risk the attempt.
This has the possibility of ending very, very badly, John warned.
Butcher smiled.
He can't put us all down, he said. And if we have to, I'm sure Brian will take us in.
It won't be easy, but we'd be able to bide our time until it was safe to come back.
If it's all the same with you, I'd like to avoid that, John said dryly.
He was reaching down to shoo Mulligan away, who decided the trousers of John's impeccable black suit was the best place to rub his head, when he heard the sound of a cellular phone vibrating against something in Butcher's pocket.
Yes, Butcher answered.
He was silent for a few moments before a dark look came over his face.
Are we going to discuss Wentz?
No, I didn't think so.
Yes. Goodbye.
He snapped the phone shut, and, for a moment, John thought he was going to throw it.
We've been summoned, he said. There's a meeting at the house in an hour. We're all expected to attend. I'm supposed to track down our missing people and let them know.
Well, they're right outside, John said. So that was remarkably easy. I'm going to get them.
Have you finally learned hospitality after all these years? Butcher asked.
No, John replied. But we're going to make Beckett wait a while. Call Brendan. Tell him to get down here. It shouldn't take long. We already know he remembers the address.
Butcher smiled and flipped open his phone. He dialed as John headed to the door, punching in the security code and throwing it open once more.
They waited over an hour before heading to the Dandy House, during which time John spoke with each vampire in turn, questioning them until he was convinced that they truly understood the severity of what they were about to do. He'd worried, briefly, that he'd have to turn some of them away, that they'd treat it as nothing more than a game to soothe hurt feelings. But that wasn't the case. He was happy to see the serious looks on their faces, their honest desire to fix the mess their city had become. Several of his supporters wouldn't be much help in a fight. They were young, like Nate and Michael, or weak, like Bert and Quinn. But John would just have to trust the butcher when he said there would be no fight. John wanted to contact Brian or Gabriel, if only to let them know he was about to use their names. But he knew it wasn't a wise choice. If this was going to happen, if he was going to earn it, he'd have to do it on his own. Anything that smacked of asking for help would only undermine what he was trying to do. Brendan took his time getting to John's apartment, coming up with Michael, who'd been posted in the lobby with the elevator key. Brendan smiled when he saw the turnout, taking his hat off as he came farther into the room. "Your doorman is tied up under his desk," he announced. "But he's not bleeding out on the floor, so he should consider himself lucky," Butcher pointed out. Brendan nodded at that, a small smile on his face as he continued to look around. The smug expression is what finally snapped John's patience. He moved quickly, leaving Nate mid-conversation, and grabbed hold of Brendan's shoulder, directing him back toward the bedroom. He slammed the door behind them, spinning the younger vampire around and backing him up against the solid oak surface. "Not happy to see me?" Brendan asked. The words were light, laced with bravado that John didn't think Brendan actually felt. That managed to temper some of his anger. "You had no right to put me in this situation," John said, resisting the urge to shake Brendan. His fingers dug into Brendan's arms instead, and Brendan was smart enough not to complain about the pain or the mess John was making of his well-pressed clothing. "This would have happened anyway," Brendan said carefully. "At least this way the slight is fresh in everyone's minds, and they're willing to stand with you. You weren't there last night. You didn't see the way they were all clustered in the hallway, trying to catch sight of Siska on the floor. Nothing is going to happen to Pete, nothing of consequence," Brendan continued. "Beckett will harass him, maybe even scare him this time, but Butcher wants him dead. By all rights, he should have died the minute he started hunting us." "I'm not going to execute Pete Wentz," John said. "But you're not going to stop someone else from doing it either," Brendan pointed out. "You're not going to keep him safe at all costs. You know what's at stake. That's the difference between you and William Beckett." "Don't think you've gotten away with this," John said after a moment. "You still had no right to tell them where to find me. I can't bring Spencer here again, not if they know where it is."
"John, after tonight, you'll be the leader of the dandies," Brendan said. "Do you really think you'll be sleeping away from the house?"
He had a point. Much of John's time would be spoken for, though he could work it out so that most of his duties were done after Spencer was asleep. He might be safe at the house, even though John wasn't particularly keen on exposing him to the rest of the dandy population. Although there would be those who wouldn't go along with his leadership, the ones who would agree to his face and quietly go behind his back to spy for Beckett. John had no doubt that it would happen. Anyway, it was a moot point. It would take the boy time to get over what had happened. Hopefully by then, everything would have settled in the city.
"There are still consequences," John said, leaning close.
"It wouldn't be the first time you put me over your knee," Brendan said with a grin. "Keep digging that hole, Brendan," John advised. "That's what you do best."
"You'll do what you see fit, and nothing I do is going to change that," Brendan said. "There's no point in worrying about it."
"Let's go," John said, deliberately not responding to Brendan's comment. "We've waited long enough. If this is going to happen, it has to be now."
"Wouldn't want him to come looking for us," Brendan agreed. "That would ruin the surprise."
John left the bedroom, Brendan right behind him, and headed for the door. The others got the hint and stopped talking immediately, falling into line behind John and the butcher, who had easily taken Brendan's place as second in line. John was thankful that they didn't squabble, though he supposed they had more pride than to throw a tantrum like a pair of spoiled human brats. The Dandy House was clear across town, which was a large part of what had attracted John to the apartment he'd bought. It took a few minutes to sort out the logistics of stealing so many cars, and even then John wanted to laugh for the ridiculousness of it. A procession of dandies, driving along in 7 packed sedans. He vehemently vetoed the minivans. They left the cars in a row down the street from the Dandy House, trusting that someone would come to take them away as usual, and made the short walk to the gates that surrounded the property. John punched in the security code and led his people up the pathway. He knew this would be as much about appearances as it was about the strength of will, and he wished he could turn back and look at the vampire standing behind him. They'd make a pretty picture from a purely aesthetic point of view. Beckett appeared in the doorway, leaning nonchalantly against the frame. He watched the group with narrowed eyes, and John heard his people fan out behind him, staying far enough back that he wasn't crowded, but close enough that there was no doubt whose side they were on. "Did you find my strays, John Walker?" he asked. "They found me, actually," John replied with a shrug. "Well now, isn't this interesting?" Beckett drawled. He pushed away from the doorstep, coming a few steps forward and standing at the top of the stairs. "Maybe," John said. "But not unexpected. Not if you're being honest, Beckett." "Honesty?" Beckett laughed. "What place does honesty have in what you're trying to do?" "Not trying," John corrected. "Doing. There are an awful lot of dandies out here who have absolutely no confidence in you or your ability to lead them." "This isn't a parliament," Beckett spat. "We don't have no confidence votes. You fall in line or you get put down. It's a fairly easy system, Walker." "It is," John agreed. "But only when it's applied equally to everyone in your hierarchy. Can you think of someone who hasn't fallen in line? Someone who's been allowed to get away with far too much in recent days?" There was movement behind Beckett then, the rest of the dandies coming out onto the porch. Departed as Carden appeared in the doorway, holding a torn and bloody sweater. He handed it to Beckett, who threw it down at John's feet. "We've had a conversation, he and I," Beckett replied. Behind him, John could feel the butcher bristling at that comment. He stayed silent, though, for which John was glad.
"I'm afraid that's not enough," he said.
"I'm afraid it doesn't matter," Beckett snapped. "Have you even thought this through? You're going to give ideas to the others. How long do you think it'll be before the hoods come for you? The punks? Or what about one of them?" He nodded to the people standing behind John. "How long until they decide they can do better?"
"They didn't choose me at random, Beckett, and you know it," John said. "Nicholas chose me as his successor."
"And you turned him down," Beckett said.
"I shouldn't have," John said. "I had no business disappointing him like that. Everything I learned, every single lesson, was to teach me how to replace him. I wasn't ready then. He saw it. So he went with you instead. Nicholas was a very smart man. I wouldn't be surprised if he knew we'd come to this eventually."
"Nicholas Skimeka was not a seer,"
Beckett argued.
No, but he was a great judge of character, Jones said. And I think he had your number. He just figured it would have come up long before now.
Pretty words that mean nothing in the end, Beckett said.
Maybe not, but here's one that does. Brian. And two more. Gabriel and Maya, John said.
He came closer then, two measured steps.
Brian's already abandoned us. I have no idea why Gabriel hasn't cut us off already, but he will, make no mistake about it. And then there's Maya, mourning the fledgling she sent us to keep safe. He didn't even make it off the plane. Who does that leave you, William? Victoria?
John laughed a little.
Does she even have enough people to make it count? She can't send you everyone, you know.
You're actually serious about this, Beckett said, amazement coloring his voice.
You really do think you're going to get away with it?
Yes, John said simply. You've burned every one of your bridges, save one. You should have thought twice about that. As for your people... He looked over Beckett's shoulder, at each of the vampires in turn.
You're welcome to stay, he told them. Or you're free to go. There are no grudges, no suspicion, whatever option you pick. The choice is yours to make, but know that there are going to be changes here if you stay.
Are you really taking advice from traitors? Beckett asked, gesturing toward Brendan, who'd stayed quiet on John's other side.
He's no traitor, John said, emphasizing each word, not only for Beckett, but also for the others standing around him. He did what he had to in order to keep you in check. Do you really want to rehash that whole situation? We can if you'd like. Once I'm done with Brendan and Ryan, I can bring up Gerard and Frank, me and Spencer, Butcher and Siska.
I never touched Siska, Beckett laughed.
Maybe not, but you didn't do much after he was injured,
John pointed out.
And now we've come full circle. This has been dragging for far too long. You don't seem to think much of outside alleys, but I can contact some if you'd like. How long do you think it'll take for Brian himself to show up on our doorstep? If he's not already on his way, that is. He has been known to see things well in advance. I know Gerard would be beyond happy to lend a hand, and where he goes, the Deimos is likely not far behind.
Beckett didn't have a lot of options, especially when more than a handful of his own people, those Butcher hadn't felt comfortable approaching beforehand, were starting to look uncomfortable and shuffle a little toward the door. His hands were tied. With so few willing to stand with him, and only one ally in another city, there wasn't much he could do. If he kicked up much of a fuss, it would attract more attention from other gangs than was entirely safe.
This is nowhere near close to being over, Beckett said finally. I wouldn't expect anything less from you, John admitted.
It wasn't an insult, simply the truth. Beckett was nothing if not tenacious when he wanted to be. Beckett made his way down the steps with slow, deliberate movements, a look of such hatred on his face, the likes of which John had never seen before. There was some movement behind him as Victoria's two envoys, Suarez and Ryland, followed.
Everyone else is staying here, Beckett announced. He'll never know who is loyal to you, John. Not really. You'd better watch your back. Anything could happen.
I'm sure it could, John said. He stepped to the side, and his people cleared a path for Beckett and the envoys. He glared as he walked past them, no doubt taking names to make sure he didn't miss anyone. John wanted to watch them go, but didn't, giving Beckett his back and focusing his attention on the vampires still standing on the steps.
The look on Cardin's face was furious, but he kept quiet. He'd be a problem, John knew, but he'd been prepared for that. He'd just have to keep an eye on him at all times and control the flow of information. I meant what I said, John told them. There's still a place for you here. Until we break your rules, Cardin said. Whatever those may be. Keep your hands off things that don't belong to you, and learn the difference between want and need, and we'll get along just fine, John replied. He waited until he heard the sound of a car speeding off down the street, before making his way up the steps and inside the house. His people trailed along behind him, and the others, after standing there dumbly for a moment, followed suit. There was so much to do, John thought. He was surprised how excited he was to get started. John had never been so glad to be away from the Dandy House in his life. After 2 days of nothing but putting out fires and trying to get people to trust him, he'd finally left things in Butcher's capable hands for a few hours. He'd always enjoyed wandering the darkened streets, taking in the sights and sounds, feeding whenever the urge struck him, harassing people whenever he found anyone worth bothering. Not having a specific destination in mind made it all the more interesting, in his opinion. He never set out to end up anywhere, and tonight was no exception. That didn't mean he didn't recognize where he was headed, though, and didn't know that it wasn't one of his better ideas. Samson Bridge was quiet, though there were still a few people below. John could hear their murmured voices and their heartbeats, could smell the beer and the pot. He stood there on the sidewalk regardless, leaning on the railing as he watched the dirty water breaking on rocks and trash. There was something almost hypnotic about it. On nights like this, he'd usually pull up a few stolen memories, relive them once again, find new and interesting things about their rightful owners. It was always thrilling to do, but John pushed the urge away. He couldn't afford to be distracted, not now that he'd dealt such a blow to the Dandy structure. The other gangs must surely have heard about it, were even probably starting to get over the shock of it in order to begin scheming in earnest. He felt the tug low in his belly, long before he heard footsteps approaching. He knew who it was even before he recognized the movements, the scraping of sneakers against the concrete, the nervous rub of sweaty palms on stiff denim. John ducked his head to hide his smile, resisting the urge to move away from the railing, to turn and look at the boy he'd marked. Spencer took his time about closing the distance, but John didn't try to rush him. He enjoyed the feel of the connection between them and wondered how long it would take for it to grow stronger. Spencer leaned against the railing next to John, the boy's body mimicking his stance exactly, though the vampire wasn't sure if that was intentional or by accident. They stood in silence for a while, both staring down at the water below. "There is absolutely no reason for me to be here," Spencer finally said. "I know," John replied. "Good. I just wanted that out there," the boy said. John laughed, finally turning to look at him. Spencer looked better rested, though still a little tired. His hair was in disarray from the wind, and the soft cotton of his blue t-shirt was creased. "Ryan tells me you've had a few interesting days," Spencer said conversationally. He was making an effort, trying to find a balance between them, and that made John want so much to touch him that he slipped his hands into his pocket to keep from reaching out. "It should have been done long ago," John confessed. "I just wasn't paying attention." "Or maybe there wasn't a reason to," Spencer mumbled, ducking his head and leaning over the guardrail a little, pretending to be interested in something in the water.
"Or that," John agreed.
He did touch Spencer then, just a hand between his shoulder blades, nothing the boy couldn't shake off if he wanted to. Spencer sighed and turned away from the water, moving closer until he'd managed to fit himself along John's side.
"Pete's the one who told Ryan all about vampires," Spencer said. "What's going to happen to him?" "If he's smart, he'll get out of that warehouse," John said grimly. "Someone will burn it down while he sleeps. Safe houses are only safe if they're secret."
Whether it was the mention of safe houses or just some random thought pulled out of thin air, Spencer blurted, "I miss my cat." His voice was muffled by John's shoulder.
"Is that it?" John asked with a laugh. "Maybe not all," he admitted.
John smiled and ran his hand down Spencer's back once more, before urging him to stand straight so John could lead him away from the bridge. His apartment wasn't far, and though it would no longer be suitable for long-term hiding, Mulligan was still there. He'd made Brendan see to his care, though John suspected he'd pass the duty off to Ryan. The younger vampire hadn't come home with cat hair all over his suit like he should have. They talked quietly as they walked, Spencer asking questions and John either doing his best to answer or to subtly distract the boy from what he'd asked. Spencer was too smart for that to last long, and finally learned to steer clear of certain topics. The conversation soon turned to Brendan, and John made sure to let several secrets slip, hoping that the information would make it back to Ryan, so Brendan would be forever pestered. He was laughing, Spencer begging to know why, when John sensed another vampire nearby. He was careful not to alarm Spencer as he shook his head, refusing to answer, and scanned the row of houses on either side of the street. There was a tiny house on the corner, maybe 50 yards away, with yellow shutters, neat rows of tulips, and a dandy standing in the driveway. It was Carden, looking for all the world as though he had every right to be there. He caught sight of John and turned to glare at him, no doubt thinking he'd been followed like an errant child. John slipped an arm around Spencer's shoulders, doing his best to convey the accidental nature of their meeting. It didn't seem to matter. Carden's eyes narrowed further before he turned away altogether, stalking up the driveway and slipping into the house, and closing the door firmly behind him. It didn't escape John's notice that there hadn't been anyone around to offer an invitation. He stared at the house for a moment, brow furrowed as he tried to make sense of the situation. The area wasn't suitable for a safe house, and it was obviously occupied. "What's wrong?" Spencer asked. "Nothing," John said, forcing a small smile. "We're almost there, come on. There's a cable bill I'd like you to take a look at." Spencer groaned and shook his head before covering his face with his hands. John laughed at the deep blush creeping over the boy's skin. He led Spencer around the corner and resisted the urge to turn back toward the little house. He was determined to enjoy his time with his boy. But John knew the mesmerist would never be far from his thoughts. The end. If you can't ever